Osho, the path of the mystic, responses to disciples' questions, given in Punta del Este, Uruguay, discourse number 13.
Beloved Bhagwan, when I meet with someone in the heart, I become completely intoxicated by the experience. In those moments, I feel gloriously fulfilled and ecstatic. A tremendous amount of energy starts moving in my body, and I feel to go totally with it, to lose myself in it. Then, and it always happens, the pendulum makes a natural swing in the other direction, and I find myself clinging to the recent moments of love and become unhappy. This feels like a very old pattern. I would be grateful if you would talk about awareness and love, or how to let go but not get lost.
One has to remember not to choose one part from a complementary whole. You are choosing half the circle and when the other half will come, which is bound to come, it will create misery. Misery is nothing but choice. You choose the experience of love, the feeling of ecstasy, but by choosing, you are going to be caught in a natural process. You will cling to these feelings, and they are not permanent. They are part of a wheel which is moving, just like the day and the night. If you choose the day, what can you do to avoid the night? The night will come. The night does not bring misery. It is your choice of the day against night that is creating misery. Every choice is bound to end up into a miserable state. Choicelessness is blissfulness. And choicefulness is let go. It means the day comes, the night comes, the success comes, the failure comes, the days of glory come, the days of condemnation come. And because you have not chosen anything, whatever comes is all right with you. It is always fine with you. Slowly, slowly, you will see a distance growing in you. That the circle will go on moving, but you are not caught in it. It doesn't matter to you whether it is day or night. You are centered in yourself. You are not clinging with something else. You are not making your center somewhere else. You must have come across small children's books, stories, in which some monster has put his life into something else, for example, into a parrot. Now the monster cannot be killed. Whatever you do is useless. The monster has become absolutely protected. Unless you know the key that his life is in the parrot, then you need not kill the monster. You have simply to kill the parrot. And as you kill the parrot, the monster goes through tremendous suffering, as the parrot is killed, the monster is killed. In my childhood, I have always wondered about this kind of stories. And I never could take it that it is just a story. I harassed my parents, my teachers, that there must be some meaning in it. And they all said it is just a story, an entertainment for small boys. There is no meaning in it. But I was never convinced. I simply thought that they have never pondered over the matter, and I was right, because later on I found this phenomenon. Everybody has put his life into something else. Those stories were not ordinary stories. they were immensely significant, because it is not a question of one person. Everybody has put his life into something else. Your clinging means you are putting life there. And your clinging cannot stop the wheel of existence moving. It will move, and you will have to fall into the opposite, and then there is misery, anguish, as if existence has considerably destroyed your love, your ecstasy, your joyful experience. Existence has not done anything to you. Whatever is happening in your life, only you and you are responsible for it. If you had not been clinging, the wheel would have moved. You would have enjoyed without clinging. And you would have also enjoyed when it has gone. It is just a little bit subtle. You are enjoying a very ecstatic moment. But however ecstatic it may be, even ecstasy is going to be tiring. You cannot be ecstatic 24 hours, you will be utterly exhausted. Even love has its limits. I am reminded of a Sufi story. A king was in love with a very beautiful woman, but the woman was already in love with a servant of the king, and the servant was far more authentic an individual than the king. The king was a hypocrite, as usual. But it was very much offensive to the king that he should be rejected, and the servant, his own servant, should be the winner. He asked his advisors what has to be done, because I cannot take this defeat easily. by my own servant. And the advisors suggested him some idea, and he followed it. The woman and the servant were caught hold, naked. They were forced to embrace each other, and they were tied in that position with a pillar in the palace. Few of the king's court could not believe what you are doing. You wanted this woman. And you are giving her yourself to your servant. But the king has understood the psychological idea of the advisors. To embrace your beloved in your privacy, in your aloneness, is one thing. And to be in her embrace, tied with a pole, in an open place where hundreds of people were moving, was another thing. And soon it became disgusting. It was hot and they started perspiring. Twenty-four hours they were together, and the experience became so horrible. That when after 24 hours they were left, they both escaped away from the palace and away from each other, and they never met each other again. Everything was finished, the whole romance of meeting the beloved, of being embraced by her. Has turned into a nightmare. 24 hours tied together with a pillar. It became an ugly experience. And the king rewarded the advisor and he said, "Do you really understand human mind? Something maybe significant for a moment, you kiss someone, but if you are continue to kiss the person 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, do you think the joy of kissing the person will be increasing as time increases? It will be decreasing. As the time increases, the joy will be decreasing. And at a point, it will turn into a terrible experience. You would like somehow to get rid of the beloved, and perhaps the horrible experience will leave such a deep impression on you that even for a single moment again, kissing that woman will not bring joy to you but only the memory of the nightmare. If you enjoy ecstasy without thinking that it should be always, then there is no problem. When ecstasy comes, enjoy it. And when it goes, enjoy it that it is gone. Because if it remains forever, it won't be ecstasy anymore. It will become agony. Existence is wiser than you. It takes away things from you before they lose all significance for you. And it is good that beautiful things should happen and then there should be a gap, a rest. One needs rest from love too. One needs rest from ecstasy too. One needs rest from everything. Don't take that rest is against your ecstasy. It is really in favor of it. It creates the background that tomorrow again you will be able. One of the great poets of India, Rabindranath Tagore, has written a book. The last poem is the name of the book, but it is not a book of poetry, it is a novel. And the uniqueness of it is that the hero and the heroine are in deep love. They want to get married. The heroine is agreed to marry him only on one condition, that they will not live in the same house. They are very rich people. And the woman suggests that you can make the house on the other side of the lake. We will not invite each other. We will be meeting accidentally once in a while. I may be boating, you may be boating, or I may be walking around the lake and you may be walking. But I want it to be accidental. and once in a while, not every day. I want to long for it. I want to wait for it. And I don't want to destroy it by having too much of it. I love you. The man cannot understand. He said, this is nonsense. If you love me, then what you are suggesting, no lover has ever suggested. Lovers don't want to be separate even for a single moment. And what kind of love is this? That I will be living far away on the other side of the lake. It is miles distance. You cannot invite me, I cannot invite you. And we are married, but we have to meet like strangers once in a while, by chance, not by arrangement. The woman said, if you cannot understand it, then I am not for you. And what the woman is saying is perfectly true. If every lover has understood it, life would have been a very joyful experience. But lovers cling. They want to be together 24 hours. And they destroy something beautiful. Because they don't give rest. It becomes a burden rather than a joy. They don't allow a gap for longing, for waiting. So all lovers who get married soon find that the only mistake they have committed is the marriage. All love marriages fail, without exception. The only successful lovers are those who, by circumstances, by society, by parents, were not allowed to meet, to marry, and to be with each other. They are the only successful lovers. They love each other to the last moment of their life. Their longing goes on growing. They are unhappy. They are miserable. That they cannot meet the person they wanted to. But they don't know. The reality and its way of functioning. I have heard two men were trying to commit suicide. It was a rare phenomenon that two men by chance reached on the same rock from where they were going to jump into the river. They looked at each other and they said, "Strange. Have you also come here to commit suicide?" He said, "Yes." So before committing suicide, there was a little conversation which changed the whole thing. The suicide never happened. They asked each other, "Why you are committing suicide?" The one said, "I loved a woman and I could not get her because she loved somebody else and I cannot live without her." He described the woman, he told the name of the woman, and the other man was sad. He said, "What are you saying? I am committing suicide because of this woman, because I got married to her and I cannot live with her. You cannot live without her. I cannot live with her." And fate has played a great game to bring us both here on this rock. Now what shall we do? Committing suicide seems to be now absolutely meaningless. But both were right. One could not live without her. He had missed her. He could not get her. The other got her. And soon everything fades. And we are responsible for it. And everything that was beautiful turns ugly. Something that looked very charming turns out to be very bitter. The whole problem is, if you can live without any choice, whatever comes, enjoy it. When it goes, then something else comes, enjoy it. Day is beautiful, but night is beautiful in its own way. Why not enjoy both? And you can enjoy both only if you are not attached with one. So only a choiceless person squeezes the juice of life to its totality. he is never miserable. Whatever happens, he finds a way to enjoy it. And this is the whole art of life, to find a way to enjoy it. But the basic condition has to be remembered. Be choiceless. And if you can be choiceless, you can be choiceless only if you are alert, aware, watchful. Otherwise, you are going to fall into choice. So choicelessness and awareness have different meanings in the dictionary, but not in existence. They have the same meaning. Either be choiceless or be aware. It is the same thing. Then you can enjoy everything. When success comes, you can enjoy it. When failure comes, you can enjoy it. When you are healthy, you can enjoy it. When you are sick, you can enjoy it. Because you don't have any attachment with anything. You have not put your life into anything. Your life is free movement. Moving with the time, moving with the wheel of existence. Keeping pace, never lagging behind. Life certainly is an art, the greatest art. And the smartest formula is choiceless awareness, applicable to all situations, all problems.
Beloved Bhagwan, since I began reminding myself to be aware in my dreams, three things have come up. First, my dreams seem to be retreating deeper into the depths of my sleep. Second, when awareness comes to the dreams, I immediately wake up. This can happen several times during the night, and then I'm faced with trying to fall back to sleep again. Third, there seems to be a part of me that enjoys being entertained by the dreams, and gleefully encourages the whole show as soon as sleep takes me over. Can you shine your torch on the shadowy corner of my basement?
You have taken note of three things, but actually four things are happening, and the fourth is the most important, that you are missing in your counting. A certain part in you is aware, is watching. that part takes note of all these three things, the dreams go deeper into the unconscious, that you wake up every time, you become aware that it is a dream. That there is a certain part in you which enjoys dreaming. All these three are true, but not so significant as the fourth, the one who has noted these three. So you go on doing what you are doing, just become aware of the fourth two. Pay more attention, give more juice to the fourth, because that is the only real thing in you. The watcher. All these three things will slowly disappear. First, the dreams will slip deeper into unconscious. But if you continue they will come to the rock bottom of the unconscious. And they cannot escape anymore. They have to face you. If you go on doing the exercise, each time you will wake up, because you will become aware this is a dream. It is significant that as your exercise will become more and more solid, the number of times that you wake up will be less and less. Because less and less dreams will be there. Thirdly, as time goes on, you will see the one part which enjoys dreaming. It's really an unfulfilled part of your waking life, which you have been not allowing. There are so many things to enjoy. Many of them look childish. And you don't enjoy them. Because what people will say? Everybody in his bathroom enjoys few things which he will not enjoy in the public. Making faces before the mirror. If you allow your this part of your mind which wants to enjoy, That simply means it is the repressed part from your very childhood that has been forced to be serious. No child is born serious. Every child is full of joy and very ready for any entertainment. But the grown-up society wants him to grow up as soon as possible, if not in years, then at least in manners. This repressed part enjoys your dreams. If you allow it in waking time, enjoyment about small things, without caring what the world thinks about it. Because the opinion of others means nothing. You have to live your life according to your own inner sources, not according to anybody else's opinion. If you allow this part, it will disappear from the dreaming world. It has to enter there because there was no other way to get fulfilled. And pay more attention to the watcher who is just behind the whole scene, seeing all these things happening. Soon the day will be there that only the watcher remains. And the day you can watch your own sleep. And remember, watching the sleep does not disturb the sleep. Watching is not an activity. The word gives a wrong connotation. It is not an activity, it is just like a mirror. Now mirror mirrors things, but mirroring is not an activity. It is just the nature of the mirror, that whatever comes before it is reflected. Exactly is the situation of your witness. Just a mirror. It can reflect your waking, it can reflect your sleep, and it never disturbs anything. And it is one of the beautiful experiences to see yourself asleep. because this will become a foundation to see yourself as awake. And ultimately this will be helpful to see yourself dying. But the watcher is eternal. It is immortal. It can see you as sleeping. It can see you as dead. Alexander in India threatened one mystic that if you don't come with me to Greece, he pulled his sword out of its sheath and said, I will cut your head. Within a second, your head will be on the ground. The mystic said, don't wait, do it. You will see the head on the ground. I will also see the head on the ground. Alexander became a little puzzled. He said, what do you mean? You will see the head on the ground. Your head will be on the ground. He said, yes. My head will be on the ground. But my reality is far more bigger than my head, my body. You can cut my whole body into pieces. Just as you will be seeing it, I will be also seeing it. The only difference will be, you will not be able to see me. I will be able to see you cutting my body into pieces. And this is the whole secret of mysticism. So rather than waiting, you cut the head. Because anyway, it is of no use anymore. I have used it. And I have come to the point when it is no more needed. And you can cut any other piece of the body. And if you enjoy cutting, go on cutting as much as you want, in hundreds of pieces. But remember, you cannot threaten me, because death means nothing to me. It is difficult even for a man like Alexander. To hurt this kind of man, he withdrew his sword. And he said, just forgive me, I don't know what the Eastern mystics are. Just my teacher, his teacher was Aristotle, had asked me to bring a sannyasin from India. When I will be coming back, and I could not disregard his request. I have talked to many sannyasins, but they did not look me worth taking. You are the man that Aristotle will rejoice to see. But you are not willing to go. I am ready to give you everything you want. You will be a royal guest. You will live in the palace. Everything will be provided for your comfort. But the mystic said, there is no way. I never follow anybody's orders. You committed a mistake in the beginning. You ordered me. If you had requested me, I may have come. But now it is too late. And you threatened me. Now, I cannot come with a person who is incapable of seeing. With whom he is talking. You are just blind. In the East, nobody threatens a man like this. You just tell your teacher that if he wants to meet real sannyasins, he will have to come here. That's the only way. No real sannyasin is going. With you. For the simple reason, because these people live in freedom, they cannot become prisoners even in golden cages. But tell the message to your teacher. And tell him also that he has not taught you anything significant. He is only a teacher, not a master. From far away, just looking at Alexander and his behavior, he deduced a very valid conclusion about Aristotle. He was really a teacher, not a master. He was only a logician. He was not the man who knows. And after seeing this mystic, even Alexander lost his interest in Aristotle. It was bound to be so. Because he knew that Aristotle was greedy, afraid, So much so that when he was a child, Aristotle used to come to teach him, but he will tell him, just become a horse, I don't want any teaching today, I will ride on you. And he will become a horse and Alexander will ride on him. He has seen a different kind of man. You cannot even threaten him by naked sword. And he challenges you to cut his head. And what he has said, that I will see to the seeing, the witnessing, is totally apart from the body, from the mind. The most important thing is that you continue the exercise, so slowly, slowly dreams disappear and your waking again and again will disappear with it. Enjoy while waking every kind of thing, howsoever childish it looks. At least here with me, nobody is going to judge about you. This is going to be one of the basic things of the mystery school, that no judgment about anybody. Everybody has to do whatever he feels to do, loves to do, enjoys to do. Then only witnessing remains. And that is the source which from every angle I want you to reach.
Beloved Bhagwan, listening to your beautiful answering of our questions, more and more often I feel my body falling to certain tune with your melody. Sometimes it reminds me of experiences I had during the third stage of Kundalini meditation. Could you please shed some understanding on this?
It is perfectly good. Listening to me has to become meditation, at least to my people. It is not just a lecture. The way you listen in the university, or a sermon the way you listen in a church. Its purpose is totally different. Its purpose is to create a silence in you. And a rhythm that is in tune with my rhythm. And slowly, slowly it starts happening by itself. You are not to do anything. You have just to be available. And then it will be almost like meditation. It may be Kundalini, it may be dynamic, it may be Vipassana, it may be any meditation. But it will be the cream of it. Only one man, Mahavira, is unique in this aspect, in the whole history. He alone has said that if the disciple listens totally, then he has nothing else to do. No meditation, no discipline, no yoga, nothing else. So he has said that there are two ways. One is the way of the monk, and one is the way of the sravaka. Sravaka means the listener. And certainly, according to him, the way of the listener is far higher. Because if you can listen so intensely, so totally, that it becomes a meditation in itself, that you don't need to do anything, the monk has to do much. But what a strange fate. Even in Jainism, the monk is higher than the sravaka. Nobody has bothered to look into the phenomenon that the sravaka is naturally higher and superior. Because he needed to do nothing. He simply listened with whole heart and became transformed. But in the world, the person who is doing ascetic practices, fasting, torturing himself, even in Jainism, he became higher. And there is second reason also, because the listener disappeared with the Mahavira. Then there was no other with whom he could have attained just by listening. So sravaka simply became every follower of Mahavira is called sravaka now. And the monk is still has the prestige because he works so hard. Perhaps he is the most ascetic out of all religions, most self-torturing than anybody else. Naturally, he became higher. And the sravaka completely lost its meaning. For the first, because there was nobody whom he can listen, no man of the quality of Mahavira, and secondly, he listens to these monks, but nothing happens. So naturally, these monks are higher, he is lower. When I raised the question for the first time in a Jaina conference, that the sravaka is higher than the monk, it was a shock, because for 25 centuries nobody has said that. Sravaka has lost its meaning, it has simply become the follower, the believer. Its meaning is the listener. Sravan means listening, and sravaka means the listener, the right listener. But a master is needed. Or if a man is intelligent enough, he can listen to the wind passing through the pine trees, and the same will be the effect, or the sound of water. The ocean waves continuously coming and is splashing on the bank. If one sits silently there and listens to their eternal coming, or just one sits outside and listens to birds, or anything that is happening, even in a crowd, if he simply listens to the crowd without any judgment, as if he is listening to his master, because it is not the question what you are listening. It is the question that you are simply listening with your total being. And it will bring a meditative state.
Beloved Bhagwan, can trance-like states be higher or lower than conscious?
The trance-like state is always lower than the conscious. It is always unconscious. It is a very significant question. Because for centuries it has been avoided and not discussed. Because there has been people like Ramakrishna who used to go in a trance very easily. Ultimately he became enlightened, but he became enlightened when he met a master who taught him witnessing. Before that he was not an enlightened man, but he was a very simple very spontaneous, very loving person. And he will be going into trance by seeing anything. For example, he was passing by the side of a lake. It was evening time, the sun was setting, and there was a black cloud. The rains were just to come. And as he passed, he disturbed almost 24 cranes must be sitting by the side of the lake. Because of Ramakrishna's coming there, they suddenly flew against the black cloud, the white cranes, 24 in a row, and a beautiful sunset underneath. He fell suddenly then and there into a trance. He had to be carried to his home. It took 3 hours for him to come back. Just the beauty of it was enough. But it was not a superconscious state. It was tremendously relaxing, but it was below consciousness. There are Mohammedans in India. And you will be surprised to know that India is not a Mohammedan country, but India has the largest population of Mohammedans in the whole world. No other country has bigger population of Mohammedans. And they have a certain festival every year. In which they believe that the saints can be called back into a trance-like state into people. So in every place where there is a grave of a saint, many people will go into trance, and sometimes few people will start speaking in trance. You can ask questions and they will answer, and it is thought those answers are being given by the spirit of the saint. I never believed it, for the simple reason, because in the first place, whatever I had heard about the saint did not convince me that he was a saint. Simple qualities that are necessarily needed just to be human, even those were not there. For example, they are all meat eaters. And they become saints if they convert many Hindus, even at the point of the soul. Even if they kill to convert people. They have many wives. Mostly they are Hindu women, forcibly brought to their house. And Hindus are a totally different world. If a woman has lived the night in a Mohammedan's house, she cannot be accepted back. She has fallen. So there is no way for her then to become a Mohammedan or to commit suicide. His family's door is closed. So whatever I have heard about a saint in my birthplace, I didn't feel it. There was anything saintly in it. And moreover, Mohammedans, just like Christians and Jews, believe only in one life. And I cannot accept that, because it is my own experience that lives are continuously coming one after another. You don't have one life, you have many. hundreds, thousands. So when a person dies, whether he believes in one life or not, it doesn't matter. He will have to be born into another life. So after 300 years, who is going to come? I was very young, must have been 10 years old, when I became interested in this phenomenon of trance, the people who were going into trance and answering, and people were worshipping them, bringing fruits and sweets and rupees and clothes. So I will just sit by their side. With a long needle and just go on pushing the needle and they will go on just trying hard that I should not do that, and they are in trance and they are replying and in the middle of the reply and they will just make my needle was there, and they have a certain, they bring out the coffin of the saint out of the grave, and one who goes the deepest in trance, he takes it on his waist. They have certain arrangements. He holds it. There are ropes, four ropes. Four other people are holding those four ropes. And he dances. And I will go on doing my work. Because it is a crowd thing. And he will dance more certainly. Higher he will jump than anybody else. He will be angry with me, but he will get more sweets and more rupees and more clothes, and more people will be worshipping him. In fact, he will become the most person who has gone deepest into the trance. And afterwards he will meet me and he will say, it hurts, but no harm. You can continue. I said, in fact, you should share. Those things have come because of my needle, not because of your trance. And if you don't share, I will change. I can go to any other. There are 15 people dancing. No, no, he will say, you don't go. You can take your share. Without you, I cannot manage. It became... Others became also aware, what is the point, wherever this boy is, only there the spirit comes. So others inquiring me that what is the reason, wherever you are, the spirit comes, I said, I am a spiritual person. A If you want to have a taste, I can be your side. People will come, but don't get angry at me. None of them was in trance. I tried all of them. None of them was in trance. They were all pretending. And thousands of people believe. Trance, one can go in trance, but it is really a kind of deep hypnosis. It can't do any harm to you, but it has nothing spiritual in it. And it is never a superconscious state. I became so much known to these people that one day before, they will start coming to me that, please help me, don't go to anybody else. I promise, half and half we will save. But you have to promise to come to me. I said, don't be worried, I will see, because I have many other clients. Who is going to give me more? And who is strong enough that this needle, for almost 1 hour, 2 hours, I have to go on giving injections to the man. An ordinary man may break down and may simply shout that I don't want all this stuff. This needle is too much. Few of them came to me and they said, can't you bring a small needle? I said, no, this is a special needle. Without it, I cannot work. My father said that, why these Mohammedans come to you? And just before their festival, and that day he had been watching, he said, I have seen almost 10 persons come to you. And I don't see the point. Why? I said, you don't know. I showed him the needle. He said, I cannot connect. I said, this is their trance. He said, my God. So you are doing this business. I said, they are doing business. I'm just a partner. And my work is very simple. Just I have to keep the person dancing higher than others, giving him more and more energy by the needle. More people are attracted naturally towards him. Others by and by slow down, seeing that nobody is coming to them. He becomes the center of the whole festival. And if they offer me half of their share, he said, the youth are strange. I have been telling you to come to the temple, you won't come. And you have started going to the mosque to do this business. And this business, if somebody comes to know about it, can create a riot in the town that you are disturbing the people who are in trance. I said, you don't be worried. Nobody can say this. Because I know all of them. They are all dependent on me. Their trance is dependent on my needle. Before I entered into this business, they were jumping just slowly. Because the dead body is too much a weight. They need some energy. My father said, I don't understand you. You call this needle energy? I said, you should come and see. And he came. And he saw me, and he saw that it was true, that the person with whom I was had the most presents to him. And he was jumping higher, although he could see on his face each time. His face will go because it was a big needle. But it was a question of competition too. Those 15 people. And nobody say to anybody else, because then they will be exposing themselves that they are all fake. Nobody is true. All over the Mohammedan countries around the world, every year this goes on happening, and millions of people are befooled. There is no trance. Trance is possible, but for that you need a certain training into auto-hypnosis. Either you may have a natural tendency of falling unconscious. You may have a very thin layer of consciousness. And anything that affects you very deeply, like Ramakrishna, you may go unconscious. Otherwise, you need a training. But the training will lead you to the unconscious. It is not a spiritual growth. You have to be conscious, more conscious. And that's why my process is, first reach to the highest point of consciousness, then turn backwards, go down with the light now that you have, the insight that you have, into the deeper, dark parts of your being. Now you will be going with light, and wherever you will be, there will be light. Your unconscious has treasures. Your collective unconscious has treasures. Your cosmic consciousness has treasures. But you need light. And you need alertness. If you yourself are unconscious, how can you find any treasures in your three layers of deep unconscious mind? Okay, my son.